So we're working on the verse, on the section that's read in chapter 2 still, Perek Bet. And we are in at verse 18. Perek Bet, Pasuk Yud Chet. And we deal with the creation of woman, which is a fascinating piece. It's interesting that, I don't know if any of you remember, it's not a very fair question, but I'll ask it nevertheless, and if you don't remember, I'll remind you, where we left off last time. Does anybody remember what idea we left off with last time? And I said that was the... Sorry?
Man couldn't live on his own.
Well, I didn't say man was created as a servant. Woman, that's already going... That's going a bit far. But sorry?
You have to serve somebody.
You have to serve. The main thing is you have to be in service. Avodah, avoda means service. Man has to be in service. When man is not in service, man is selfish. And when man is selfish, then the animal comes out in man, then man is not able to access that superior part. So we've been working all along with this polarity in the human being, the godly part and the animal part, the earthly part and the divine part, and the management of that polarity. And the key to the successful management of that polarity is avodah. You've got to be in service of God, in service of another, in service of something bigger. You've got to be in service. The idea of avodah is introduced. Where is avodah introduced? The inverse of Shabbos was a bit of a clue. We noticed that there was a theme, a sub-theme of the inverse of Shabbos. But at what point in human history is Avodah introduced? It's quite paradoxical. Where are they when Avodah is introduced?
In the Gan Eden.
In Gan Eden, in the one place where you would think you don't need to work. The whole idea of Gan Eden was you didn't have to work. That's when the idea of work is first introduced, the idea of Avodah. So we see that Avodah is an absolute. It's not a relative. It's not you need to work in order to earn a living. You need to earn a living so that you work. God could have made us in such a way that we don't earn a living. And we'll understand today. I often say in my professional work that as a child I had two kashas on the Ribbono Shel Olam. I had two big questions on God, and it took me, I don't know what, probably 40 years to answer them. The answer is terribly simple, but it took 40 years to figure out the answer. My question was, if I was God. I used to play those games as a child. If I was God, would I do it this way? Would I do it that way? What would I do different to try and understand God better? And I figured out that if I was God, there are two things I wouldn't have done that he did. The first is I wouldn't have created money and the need to work. Because imagine what the world would be like if everybody had what they needed and they didn't have to compete with each other and employ and trade. Imagine how peaceful the world would be. Wouldn't it be a better world? Look how much destruction and just human degradation has come from the need to work. So why do that? Why create us that way? And the second thing is, I wouldn't have created us in need of relationships. So imagine if there was no gender, there was no sex, and there was no work. So what, and people were satisfied. I'm not talking about suggesting a Catholic kind of solution. I'm just saying, what happens if he created us in such a way, like angels, that we wouldn't need those two things? What would be so bad in the world? What would the world be missing? And it took me 40 years to figure it out. And you'll see tonight what it is. But the one thing we see is the need to work is not you've got to work because you've got to earn a living. You see that you had to work even before you had to earn a living. The idea of avodah was intrinsic in the creation of humanity. That you needed, that the human being can only manage the polarity of divine and earthly when he's in a state of avodah. And that word avodah is so important because avodah means on its lowest level slave labor. We talk about avodah and eved. And also, what's the highest level of the word avodah? What does it mean? Temple service on Yom Kippur at the most spiritual moment of the entire year. What do we say? The avodah. We recite the avodah. So is avodah a Yom Kippur spiritual divine concept, or is it slavery? Interdependent polarities. It's both. And you have to be able to hold them both. Avodah is like a human being. Just as a human being is earthy and is divine, so the word, the activity of Avodah is the most human activity because it fits with a human being wherever he or she happens to be. If you're on the lowest level, you might be an Eved, you might be a slave, and you're in service. And if you're on the highest level and you're wealthy and you're a multimillionaire and you don't need anyone or anything, who are you in service to? To God. So somewhere in the spectrum, no matter where in the spectrum you are as a human being, in terms of your own human development or human evolution, no matter where you are, the activity of Avodah applies to you. You don't have a state of being out of Avodah. There's only one state where one can be out of Avodah, and that is the most terrible, tragic situation that a human being can allow themselves to be in. Retirement. Retirement is opting out of Avodah. And opting out of Avodah means you're opting out of your humanity. That's what it means. And that's why people get ill when they retire, and people decline when they retire, and people get weird when they retire. Have you seen very wealthy people become financially insecure when they retire? They've got so much money that they couldn't even spend the interest. And all of a sudden, they're not giving so much charity, and they're getting tight with their children, and they're not spending on themselves because they're not earning. They get weird. And you've heard of many cases, I'm sure, of people who've looked forward to their retirement all their life, and they're in perfectly good health, and comes retirement, and it goes. They lose it. What is that? Don't people get it? We're not designed for retirement. We're designed for Avodah. We're built for Avodah. And retirement is an abuse of the human system. Just as you can abuse the human system by not eating correctly or by not exercising correctly, you can abuse the human system by not working, by not being an Avodah. You want to stop working at one thing and start working at something else. You want to stop Avodah for your business, you start doing Avodah for Hashem. But to stop Avodah, and Avodah means hard work. It makes no difference. The complexity and dedication and intensity of the work is not a function of where you are on the spectrum. Whether you're serving Hashem at the top or you're a slave at the bottom, you work as hard. The idea is not you work less as you go up and eventually you retire and that's the ultimate, that's the peak of evolution, of human evolution. No, you work as hard all the way through, whether you're a kid in grade school trying to understand what you're learning, or you're a kid in high school or in university, or you're starting your profession or your business. At each level, you think that there will come a time when you don't have to work so hard. My blessing to all of you is, may such a time never come, that you don't have to work so hard. The blessing is when you can choose what you want to work at, but not to work less. Because to work less is opting out of Avodah. Opting out of Avodah is opting out of the human mission. And it deprives you of the ability to manage the paradox, those polarities of the divine and the human and the base, earthy. And if you can't manage that paradox, you can't preserve your emotional health, your spiritual health, your mental health, or your physical health. All of those dimensions of health require a successful balance of the polarity of divine and physical. So Avodah is introduced very, very early. And therefore the need to work, again, you don't work for money. God made us need money so that we would work. But before we needed money, he already told us to work. And he put them in the Garden of Eden, Vayanichenu v'gan Eden, la'ovda u'lashomra, to work it and to take care of it. And whether you say la'ovda u'lashomra is referring to the garden, or whether it's referring to his soul, remember we learned that it also means your tzelem elokim. You've got to actually work your tzelem elokim. You've got to exercise your tzelem elokim. Your tzelem elokim is no different to any other part of your body. If you don't utilize it and develop it and invest in it and take care of it and work it, it deteriorates and it eventually disappears. So la'ovda la'shomra is to work at your tzelem elokim, to work at your divinity, to work at the management of the polarities. And it also means la'ovda la'shomra, to work at Torah, to serve God. It doesn't matter who you're serving, but la'ovda la'shomra, there's got to be protection and service. Of the two, you've got to protect what you've achieved and you've got to serve something greater. So we see that that's built into the Bria. What about relationship? Relationship was not built in. Am I right or wrong? So far, we're already on chapter 2. Where's Eve? The creation is finished. 6 days of creation are done. And the whole story is done. And we haven't yet met Eve. So avodah, it was put in earlier than relationship. So what is the role of relationship? And where was it put in? And how was it put in? So the first thing is, let's have a look at verse 18. Vayomer Hashem Elokim. This is such a strange sentence. When we understand how we position God as the all-knowing, as the almighty, as the creator of everything. And God Elokim says, Lo tov heyot ha'adam levado. Not so good that man should be alone. Who made him alone? You did. How long ago? Like 50 years ago? And you've suddenly learnt that it's not a good idea? No, a couple of hours ago. Now all of a sudden, Lo tov heyot ha'adam levado. Not a good idea. So if it's not a good idea, why did you do it? Every other animal you made maiden, male and female. The only one you didn't make male and female was human. And now you say, wasn't a good idea. What does that mean? I'll make him an ezer kenegdo. Difficult word to translate, but let's just translate it literally. I will make him a supporter opposite him. And so the first question is, why now? What's changed? What happened? Secondly, the female already existed within Adam. So we know that the Medrash says that they were created male and female in one being. And so Adam could procreate. Adam could have children. So what was missing? Why now, when Hashem says, Lo tov ha'adam le'et levado, so now he's separating them, then why didn't he create them separate in the beginning? And then the weirdest part is still to come. So next step, God now says, yeah, not a good idea. I need to make a woman. So what would you expect the next sentence to be? Vayasa Elokim es ha'isha, and Hashem said, let there be a woman. No, Vayitza Hashem Elokim in Adam akol chayat ha'sadeh. God had created all of the animals. Ve'et kol of ha'shamayim. And all the birds of the heaven. Vayavei el ha'odom lirois ma yikrolo. And he brings them to Adam and asks Adam to study them and to define each one, to define the essence of each one. That's what it means, ma yikrolo. To give them a name doesn't just mean to call them something. It means to define their essence, to define the essence of each one. V'chol ashi yikralo ha'adam nefesh chaya hu shmo. And Hashem says, Adam, whatever you will decide is the essence of each animal, that will become its name. It will be termed that way. We're beginning to create language. Vayikra ha'adam shemot in verse 20, and Adam called the animals by names, l'chol ha'beimah lof ha'shamayim, l'chol chayat ha'sadeh, all of them, the hundreds and thousands of different species, defined each one of them, studied each one, defined each one, gave them a name. And then the second half of that sentence, surprise. Well, Adam lo matza is a connector. He didn't find a wife among them. Come on. What is that about? Is that where you go looking for a wife in the zoo? And then you're surprised when you don't find one? You go on safari to look for a wife in the jungle? And then you say, Ribbono Shel Olam, I didn't actually find a wife there. What is the story? What is that about? Then Hashem puts him to sleep and forms Eve out of his being and all of the story that we know so well. But what is happening? So here's what I want to suggest to you. Hashem faced a grave danger in the creation of Chava for Adam. I'm not talking about had he created her at the very beginning, if they would have been created as two, we'll still discuss why he didn't do that, as far as we're able to understand. But now that he didn't create them as two, whenever he would create her as a separate being, he faces a grave danger, and so does she. What do you think is the danger? What's he going to define her role as? Don't forget, he's been alone. He's been king of the world. He studied all the animals. He now understands the essence of every animal. And he therefore understands, what do you think he really understood about each animal? How they do what? What do you think the purpose was of that study?
How they serve.
Yes, how they serve man. how every little animal, every little insect, every little fish, every little bird, what it does for the environment, what it does for the balance of nature, why it's important, what its role is, ultimately for who? For Adam. So he's alone, he's a single being who has now studied all of zoology and understands how every creature is created to serve him. Now, what's the danger? He'll assume she's there to serve him too. That Hashem wants to avoid. That's not her role, and he doesn't want him to fall into that area. And I'll show you how we know that that wasn't her role, that that was not her intention, that was not the intention. And so what is it that's important? What is his role? What do you think he felt when he kind of defines his own vacuum, his existential vacuum, which he clearly does because it says, "Ula Adam lo matza eza kenegdo." So for the first time, after studying the world and seeing how every animal, and don't forget there were some pretty impressive animals at that time. Who specifically?
Dinosaurs.
Sorry? The dinosaurs, and they're not so impressive. They eventually just disappeared. But there was some, who was really impressive? Nachash! Nachash could have made a nice companion. He could talk, he could communicate, he could seduce, he was attractive. Nachash could have been an interesting companion for Adam. So why does it say he didn't find an Ezer? And we know even, according to Chazal, and the difficult Chazal, we don't understand it fully, but the Nachash and Chava had some kind of a relationship. So this Nachash was almost human at that time. Almost human. And he wasn't like a snake is today at all. He was a different kind of being. There isn't one. We don't know what they're like. Or perhaps we do. There are lots of humans, maybe, who are really like the Nachash was. We think Nachash, we think snake. Don't think snake. Look around the world and you'll see some people who maybe fit the definition of what a Nachash could have been. So Nachash was attractive enough for Chava to be seduced by him, to engage in look, and look what conversation she engages with a Nachash. Existential dilemmas, religion, philosophy. Look at the quality of conversation. She probably hadn't had a conversation like that with her husband yet. And here this Nachash comes and engages her in the sensuality of what the garden is like and the taste of the fruit and God and what God means and what God is and what human intelligence is and the tree of knowledge, what human knowledge is, the capacity of human knowledge, probably described to her what humanity could achieve if she would eat from the tree all the way till today. She probably talked about technology and computers. The snake was really impressive. But for Adam, that wasn't a companion. Why not? In what way was the Nachash not a companion for Adam? What do you think Adam discovered when he said, "Ula Adam lo imotza eza kenegdo"? That means he could have almost found one. God wouldn't have put him into that if it was impossible. If the animal world then was like the animal world is today, this wouldn't make sense. God would not have said to Adam, "Go to the zoo and look for a wife." Not possible. But if you think of the Nachash as one of the members of that zoo, that maybe is possible. Go and explore whether there's any animal or groups of animals that could provide you with company. There are people who are alone today and they substitute companionship with animal companionship. And it's very helpful for them. And there's some people who do it by choice. So it's not so crazy to say, find an animal, find a pet. Go into the zoo and find yourself a pet that will give you the companionship that you need. And if you need intellect and you need conversation, there's a Nachash as well. Great pet that you could have. Adam goes into the zoo and he explores every single animal. V'lo matza ezer kenegdo. And if you look at the trop, the trop is so beautiful there. Because how do you, and you know we've done this before, when you use the trop, the idea of the trop is to give you the punctuation, the sound, just the music, not in the sense of singing, just the music of the voice. So if you look at the trop, the way to read this is Ula Adam, pause, and for man, Lo imotzo eze, he could not find a companion. Dramatic pause. Kenegdo, one that could be kenegdo. Whatever kenegdo means, opposite him. Let's say opposite him at the moment, and we'll analyze it a bit more. But that's the piece he couldn't find. He found Ezer. What is an Ezer? Somebody who serves or somebody you serve? What is it? Somebody who serves you. He found lots of beings who could serve him. An Ezer wasn't the problem. But an Ezer Kenegdo he couldn't find. What is the nature of an Ezer Kenegdo? What was he looking for? He realized in his existential vacuum, I'm not missing beings to serve me. There, in the animal world, I can find every kind of servant I need. And the Nachash was one of them. And even the angels weren't in the animal world, but the angels served Adam. He wasn't short of butlers and servants. Chazal talk about the fact that there were angels that cooked for him and served him and took care of him. He wasn't short of service. That wasn't the issue. What was the issue? Adam knew at that moment a fact that was just articulated this year by a scientific study that was done by a company called NeuroSense and was funded by American Express. And they measured the signs of pleasurableness in the human brain. So they did all the normal thing. How can you tell when the brain is having high levels of pleasure? And they then subjected people to various different experiences, about 9 or 10 different experiences, and they calculated the pleasure levels, and they rated how many people found most pleasure in these various different activities. And they ranged from spending time with somebody you enjoy, seeing amazing sights, kissing somebody you love, getting great service, all sorts of things they put there. Receiving great service, 63% found the most pleasurable thing. But when they measured when people were really treated well and served well, 63% of the people registered a high at that point. But 83% registered a high on providing great service. Isn't that incredible? Giving great service gives the human being more satisfaction and pleasure. This was the pleasure stuff they were measuring. Not even fulfillment and satisfaction and meaning. Pleasure. More people found pleasure in providing service than in any of the other experiences they subjected people to. And Adam knew that study. And he realized, there's nobody in the animal world I want to serve. Be served by? Plenty. No shortage of that. But there's nobody in the animal world I want to serve. That's what's missing. And that comes back to La'avda Olashamra. Man has to be in service. And he found no desire to be in service to any being, including the Nachash. No desire to be in service. Because what do you need? What are the elements you need to want to be in service? Don't forget, Adam has also got free choice. So when we talk about that Adam's job is la'avda, is to work, it's not to work in compulsion. It's not to be a slave, because then he wouldn't have free choice. And the essence of Adam is he's got free will. So how do you create a servant with free will? Well, the way to do it is to have the servant want to be a servant, want to work. 83% of the people saying providing service is pleasurable. So if I do it because it's pleasurable, if I provide great service because my bonus is dependent on it, that's not service. That's self-service. But if I provide great service because I find it the most pleasurable activity and I choose it, that's true service. That's really service. So if Adam is looking for someone to want to serve, what are the qualities he needs in this being? What are some of the qualities you would think? It has to be somebody he admires. Who wants to serve somebody you don't admire? It has to be somebody who can inspire in him a desire to serve. Like himself, somebody who is like himself? Well, perhaps like himself enough for there to be connection and intimacy and communication. But what's important is to, and this is something that's so important in management of people and in getting good service. What's the best way to get good service?
Appreciation.
Yeah, appreciation. Make the other person want to give you good service. And people naturally want to give service. Why do people not give good service? What's the reason that they hold back? If 84% of people find more pleasure in providing service than anything else, why do so few people provide good service? What holds us back from providing good service?
When I appreciate
exploitation. We won't be appreciated. That's the worst feeling. If providing good service, if caring for somebody is one of the greatest feelings, being taken for granted, being exploited, is one of the worst feelings. And we have a fear, and we'll see where that fear comes from. We will see the origin of the fear of exploitation, which is the killer of service and generosity. And it's interesting that I've always argued and I've written that generosity is the most important value in a business. In fact, it's the only value you really need in a business. And it's the way business is actually built. Business is built on the principle of generosity. If you just think of what business is, what is business? What do you have to do to have a successful business? Sure. You have to serve your customer. So you have to be generous to your customer. You've got to give your customer more perceived value than the price. Because if the customer thinks that he's paying more than he's getting, he's not going to buy unless you have a monopoly. So you've got to give the customer a feeling, and a genuine feeling, that they're getting more value than the price they're paying. That's generosity. It means I'm willing to give you more than you're giving me. Maybe not in financial terms. You're giving me $100. I'm not going to give you $105. I'll give you something that's worth, to you, more than $100. That's generosity. What about my shareholders? They invested $1 million in me. How much do I have to give them? A million? 900, more than a million. So I've got to give my customer more than they give me. I've got to give my shareholders, my investors, more than they gave me. What about my creditors? Got to give them more than they lent me. Sorry? And that's the miracle of business. That the creation of value, that the human being can create value, that's bria. That's creation. It's the most creative thing we do. To create enough value to give every stakeholder back more than they've given you. That's the creation of wealth. And that's bria, that's creation. That's the human being at his most divine and one of his most divines. Schidush, that's to be able to create new things. Entrepreneurship, that's what it is. So why are people not often generous in business? Why are businessmen always working out how to give the shareholders as little as they can, and the creditors as little as they can, and the customer as little as they can, and the employees as little as they can, when a little bit of seichel tells you business is built on generosity? Why is everybody trying to be mean? I don't believe it's greed. I don't believe human beings are naturally greedy. I believe human beings are designed to serve, and they get the most pleasure from service, and they're naturally generous. What holds us back from generosity? Only one thing. The fear of exploitation. People will take advantage of me. If I know I will be appreciated and valued, I will give and give and give. That's how the human being is. We stop giving when we don't feel that there's recognition and appreciation. So, if Adam is going to try, if Adam now wants to choose to serve, and when does he want to choose to serve this being? How often does he want to choose to serve him or her?
All the time.
All the time. That means it's a choice he's going to be able to make continuously. I must always want to be in service without compulsion. What qualities does she need to be able to do that? We're beginning to define femininity. The ability to inspire a man to want to serve her is the essence of femininity as Hashem creates it. Because that brings him into service, brings him out of himself, and you're able to create intimacy. So her qualities have to be very, very specific. And it goes beyond that. Another thing that you need with avoda is you need accountability. You're not an eved, you're not a servant if you're not accountable for what you're doing. So you need somebody who has a conscience, somebody who has a level of authority, somebody who has a moral authority, so that there can be accountability. And that's the idea of Ezer Kenegdo. She's there, Kenegdo. She's there also to challenge him when he's not being generous enough. To challenge him when he's not serving sufficiently. He's got to feel that tension. The same as your customers have to challenge you. If you're not serving them well enough, what do? They vote with their feet. They're off. They're somewhere else. And you get the message pretty quickly. You're not paying enough attention to them. And what do your investors do? They start selling. And what happens to your share price? Starts falling. What does that tell you? Not being generous enough to my investors. I'm not being generous enough to my shareholders. We get feedback. In our businesses, we get feedback. Avoda, that's why avoda is so important, because you get feedback. When you're not expressing yourself, when you're not giving of yourself, You immediately get the feedback. And the same is in relationship. And there's my answer to the question I had on the Rebbe Nishalov. Because the human being needs feedback. The human being has to come out of himself, has to be creative, has to be generous, has to be abundant, has to serve. And he or she needs feedback to know when they're failing, when they're falling short. And the two areas that give the most immediate feedback are relationship and business. That's when immediately you get the feedback that you're doing something, that you're not giving sufficiently, you're not paying enough attention, that you're not in service sufficiently. So now we're getting an idea about what this Bria needs to be, this new creation that Hashem wants to create for him, this Bria, this Ezer Kenegdo, somebody who's there to support him, and to support him in what way? If you look at the way the Unculus translates Ezer Kenegdo, it's quite fascinating. If you can read that at the end of verse 20. Adam lo ishkach samach lekivle, or earlier when Hashem says, I will make an Ezer Kenegdo, at the end of verse 18, A'aved le samech, I will provide him, what does samech come from? Lismoch, somebody on whom to rely, somebody reliable, somebody supportive. Lekivle, what does the word lekivle mean in Aramaic? It means, well, there's a Hebrew word very similar to lekivle. Kibel will come to, that's right. Kibel is one of the words, but there's another. Lichshon, no, that's chevel. Lichbol. But likbol with a kuf. But so this is not kaf, this is kuf. Lekivle with a kuf, so kabel to receive, we'll come to that aspect of it. But what do you say, how do you say parallel in Hebrew?
Hakbala,
makbil. So an ezer. So what does Kenegdo mean according to Unklus? Parallel to him. So we see quite clearly the intentions of equality. This Ezer has to be an Ezer. She has to be parallel to him. She has to be on the same level as him. The Sifurna says, when you've got a scale and you put a heavy weight in one side and a light weight in the other side, are they parallel? Are they opposite each other? They're not. The only time they're opposite each other is when they have equal weight. And so this furnace is quite clearly, Ezer Kenegdo means an Ezer who's supporting him, but is always Kenegdo. She's not lower down than him, not higher up than him. She's Kenegdo. It's balanced. That balance becomes really, really important. That's part of Lekivle. But you're right, the word Lekivle has another meaning as well. The word comes from Lekabel. So what does the word Lekabel mean? How does that fit into the woman's role in terms of what we're discussing here this evening? What is Lekabel? If you have a desire to serve, what do you need? Somebody to receive the service. In a way that elevates you. You can receive service in a way that exploits you. And you can receive service in a way that elevates you. And when the American Express study showed how people enjoy providing great service, I assure you they're not talking about providing great service to people who exploit them. That's not what they're talking about. They're talking about the pleasure of providing great service and getting great feedback. That's what's amazing. When you do something wonderful for somebody and you get that feedback, the person recognizes it, values it, appreciates it. That's the most pleasurable thing of all. So receiving is not passive. Receiving can be very active. There's passive receiving, which is horrible. To give to somebody who receives passively, you eventually stop giving. It is such an unpleasant feeling. You do it once, you do it twice, you do it three times, and you stop. If the receiver considers receiving as a passive activity, then the giver stops giving. Receiving is as much as an art as giving is. You need to know how to receive in such a way that makes the person want to be giving, because there's nothing more pleasurable than giving to an individual or a group of individuals who really know how to receive. Imagine what that would be worth in a business. If you knew how to create an environment where everybody in your business wanted, got the most pleasure out of giving, out of serving. Serving everybody, serving their managers, serving their customers, serving their investors and shareholders. Serving was their greatest pleasure. And what's the only reason they aren't like that in business is because we don't know how to receive. If you don't know how to receive, you can't inspire giving. So Ezer Kenegdo is a being gifted with the talent of being able to receive in a way that makes the giver want to give more. That's what a woman is, in terms of Ezer Kenegdo, the way the woman was created. That was her essence. That's what he was looking for. And when he looked at the animal world, including the Nachash and everything else, servants are plenty, not a problem. But who would I be able to serve that would be able to give me that kind of gratitude? And people, that's part of the reason that people like dogs, is because they seem to show gratitude. They seem to appreciate. The poor people don't realize. What are they appreciating? You? They don't know the first thing about you. They can't begin to understand you. They have no clue who or what you are. What are they really interested in? Their food. They appreciate the food. It's not appreciating you. And knowing how to receive is to make the other person feel you appreciate them, not you appreciate the food. So for example, think of it for a moment. Who's ever been on a management course? Anybody been on a management course? So when they teach you in management, if I'm doing something for you, ask me to prepare a report for you, and I prepare a report, and I know you need it really badly, it's really urgent, and you're going to appear before the board with it, and I give you this shocking piece of paper, all messed up, and you can't make head or tail out of it. It's not. There's no way you can show this to anybody. You don't even understand what it says. So what are you going to tell me the next day after I've given it to you? Yeah, but what are you going to say about the work? What will you say about me? Now, what will you, my boss, what will you say to me? That I don't care about you? Will you say I'm useless, or will you say the work is useless?
The work is useless.
Yeah, Management 101. Don't criticize the person, criticize the job. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Don't criticize the person, criticize the job. Now, what happens when it comes to complimenting? This is quite interesting. So let's say a guy, you know, is at work, he's having a terrible day, it's really hard, and he calls his wife, he says, I'm going to be home really late today, it's been an awful day, and I'm not finished, and and she feels bad for him, and she decides to really give him a surprise, and she goes out and she gets the food that he knows that he loves, and she prepares it just the way he loves it, and she makes this beautiful candlelit dinner, and she has a bottle of wine open, and soft music playing in the background, and she welcomes him home, and makes him feel good. If he compliments her at all, she would be quite fortunate if he does, what is the compliment likely to be? What's he going to say? If she's lucky.
Food is great.
Great dinner. What a great dinner. Wow. Great atmosphere. Great music. He won't say, great wife. What did I do to deserve you? Why won't he say that? Why won't he say that? No, he's not trained. And what else? What else is going on through his subconscious?
He deserves it.
What is he afraid of? Well, I'll tell you a story. So I was training a businessman in this way, teaching him how to talk to his employees. And as if ordained, as I'm just finished giving him this whole lecture, his secretary comes in, his assistant comes in, and says, I've got all you're leaving for overseas tomorrow, tickets are ready, this is ready, that's ready. I got your glasses repaired, and I also got you one of these little repair sets for your glasses in case something happens while you're away that you can fix it yourself. So I wink at him. Now's your chance. And he smiles and he says to her, you are an amazing human being. I am so privileged to have you as my assistant. What did I do to deserve a person like you? And what did she say? What should she have said? That's really nice of you to say that. I sometimes say the same thing. What did I deserve to do? What did I do to deserve a boss like you? That would have been great. But what she did say was, remember that at evaluation time. Do you think he's ever going to compliment her again? That's why we don't compliment people, because we're afraid they're going to do that. I say, I don't know what I did to deserve you, say to your wife. And what happens if she says, I don't know either? We just don't want to risk it. We just don't want to risk it. But if we know for absolute certainty that the people we engage with value us and recognize us, we would be generous. So what you're looking for, that's what we mean by active receiving, the ability to receive in a way that makes the other person want to give. The ability to receive a compliment, the ability to receive praise, the ability to receive generosity, the ability to receive love. That's what becomes most important. So what did Hashem do to make sure that Adam would get it right? The first thing was study all the servants in the world. There are plenty of servants. The whole animal world is a servant. And discover that service is not what you need. You don't need service. You need to give service. Says Adam, yes, but there's no animal in the world who can show me the kind of appreciation that would make me want to serve them. Animals don't appreciate humans. They appreciate the food that humans give them. But they don't really appreciate the human. And that doesn't make me want to serve. There's no animal I want to serve. I want to be served by them. Oh, says Hashem, now you're ready for a wife. If you understand that you don't want to be served, but you want to serve, now you're ready for a wife. And that's why the Medrash says that he wouldn't give him a wife, ad shetava'uha befiv, until he asked for it with his own mouth. He had to articulate it and say, I need a wife. And not as a servant, not as somebody to take care of me, somebody that I can invest in, somebody that I can give to, who will know how to receive, an ezer kenegda lekadle, not only parallel to me, but also able to receive from me in such a way that will inspire me to want to give so much more. And so now, interestingly, where is this woman made from? So she's separated. Now, before she was part of him, and they could procreate. So a woman is not for procreation. What do we learn from this parasha? A woman is not for procreation. You can procreate without her. And today, the same applies. You know, you can do all sorts of things. People are finding all creative ways of having children without having to be in intimate relationships with the other sex. So you don't need a woman to have, you don't need an intimate relationship to have a child. You can do that without. That's not what a woman's for. She's not there to serve you because there are plenty of animals that can do that. What is she there for? What is her role? Her role is for you to serve. That's what she's there for. Because you are at your best when you're in service. You are at your best. You can manage the interdependent polarity of divine and earthly when you're in service. That's the only time you can do it. And yes, you serve God some of the time and you serve your customers some of the time, but you need to have somebody you're serving all of the time. You're at work earning a living, not just for you, it's for your wife and later for your family. You're thinking of something, time to go home, not just because you want to go home. You have a wife who has some needs as well, and you're going home to take care of her. All day and all night, you can be in service if you're in an intimate relationship. So then why were they created in one fist? Why didn't God start off that way? Why didn't he just create man alone and unable to procreate? And then the whole thing, show him all the animals, let him discover that he needed a wife. Why the whole charade? Why start off saying... making them one. And here it's really quite interesting because the one idea is, the Or HaChaim says it, and it's quite amazing, that he had to also understand the difference between intimacy of animals and intimacy of human beings, not just that with animals it's for the purpose of procreation, but animals don't have soulmates. And people often ask, is the idea of soulmate a Jewish idea? The Or HaChaim talks about it. The Or HaChaim talks about a being. I'll read it to you inside. And even though he says in the animal world it's also called Zachar u'Nekeva, male and female, lo sheyitchayev kol zachar lahakir nekevato. There's no requirement in the animal world that each male recognizes his own female. Kol shemimino, he kolashi yizdamen lefanav mimino, harayu rashai. Anyone from the same species could be his wife. There's no particular preference. Ve'en rishum ve'yichud lenekevat zachar bebehemi, lomar zu parato shoshor zeh. There's no way you can know. This is the cow of this bull. Don't have to make shiduchim with the animals. It's just instinctive. Masha'en ken ha'adam, shelo milvad shemuvdal b'chinat hamin, elagam muvdal b'fratei hamin. not only are males and females separate beings in Torah, in humanity, but a male's female is a separate human being unlike any other. Do you see the difference? So in the animal world, there are two parts, male, female. In the human world, every male has one female, that the one that is part of him. That's something that's unique. Ki kol echad yesh lo bat zugo bifnei atzmo, because everybody has his own bat zug. And where does she come from? Ulezeh nitchakem Hashem livnot bat zugo shel adam me'atzamav. That's why God builds his companion from himself. This is not something that he just goes around and picks and chooses. The companion comes from himself. Lomar ki zu besar mibsaro, for him to know this is his soulmate. This is part of him. This forms one unit. And the Medrash says that they were not called human, they were not called Adam until they were together. Until they became gufod. Shnehem ke'echod kruim Adam. If you look carefully in the Torah, you'll see the term Adam talks about the couple. Adam is not the man. Ha-Adam, it talks about the man, meaning the male of the species. But Adam is the couple, is the two of them together. Until they come together as one, they're not yet Adam. That's what Adam is. So the Adam, there is a strange combination of separateness and oneness, as the Ramban says, so that there can also be a flow and an ebb, that they can come together and move apart, and come together and move apart, that they can be a rhythm of love. It's not just an attachment, and that's it. There's a rhythm of intimacy and a rhythm of love, which becomes part of the whole relationship. And so we had to start off as one being, separated, and then having to come together when there's a true recognition of the need for the other. The need for the other based on the need to serve, not on the need to be served. So if we now just set the scene for the last shir in the series, and which will deal obviously with the sin and the consequences of the sin. So now, you know the story, even though we haven't got there yet in the shir. What is the greatest treachery that this woman could do to the man? No, even a greater treachery in terms of what we discussed earlier. So he is now given over, he is now surrendered to her in service. And she now, and he now says, whatever you want, darling, whatever you want. And she says, well, what would you like for dinner? And he says, whatever you want. And she gives him a tzadas. That is treachery. To take such the tree of knowledge, she dishes up to him for dinner. That's treachery. He's put his complete trust in you. He's put everything into you. He's left you as the deceiver. He serves you. He's chosen to serve you. Didn't have to. He's chosen to serve you. And you take your position and abuse it to give him something which you know he's not allowed to have and will destroy him. And that's where the fear of exploitation is born. From that moment onwards, we are terribly scared of being generous. We're terribly scared of letting go. We're terribly scared of giving away our power because we don't trust. Because once in our human experience, we were severely let down. And what happened to Adam and Chava in these early times is embedded in our human DNA. We'll see another piece that became embedded in our human DNA next week. But here we see what became embedded is the fear of exploitation. The mistrust. What will happen? Can I really give up my power to another human being? What happens if they abuse me? What happens if they exploit me? What happens if they take advantage of my vulnerability? And you know from your own interactions that the only way you can build trust is with somebody who shows vulnerability. You can never trust somebody who has a mask. You can never trust somebody who doesn't show vulnerability. And we're terrified of showing vulnerability because the human experience suffered all the suffering that has resulted from this. Everything we suffer, everything that humanity suffers, has at its root the abuse of Adam's trust that Chava expressed at that time. And that left us devastated to the point, not just man, but all of man's descendants, man and woman, left us so devastated that one of the things we fear most is to give over control, to let go, to give our authority to somebody else, to surrender, to serve. This is the thing we fear most. Unless we're able to build that trust and rebuild that trust in individual relationships where you know for sure that the other person is not going to do that. And the only way you can know that is by trying. The only way you can know that is by taking risks. And it's a risk we don't. We're willing to take all sorts of risks. It's one of the risks we find most difficult, the fear of rejection. It's one of the most terrible fears that the human being has. The fear of rejection, the fear of exploitation, the fear of abuse, all had their birth at the moment that Chava abused the trust that Adam had put in her and thereby broke the whole nature of that relationship. And we'll unpack that a little bit more in a little bit more detail next week and understand the implications and how to remedy them. But that's as far as we'll go this week. So thank you.